first lesson I love to teach is about lessons. And lessons are interesting because life is about lessons, but we don't take the time to learn them. Lessons will keep on coming until they learn them. And if you have any daughters, you know the lessons keep on coming because they keep dating the same guy. He just looks different. And learn the same lessons again and again. But it's interesting because I get a $1,200 reminder every single month about lessons. And it was because I was one of those kids, maybe some of you are like this, that write down everything. And so I have a whole bunch of banker's boxes in a storage unit in California that are full of college, law school, business school, personal development, everyone from Jack Canfield to Wayne Dyer, Bob Proctor, all of my great mentors. And these boxes are full of everything I wrote down and completely worthless. So that's one type of person. The other type of person is the type of person that writes nothing down or captures nothing. And then once again, both people have the same thing to say to me at the end. They just saved $1,200 because they didn't write anything down. What I suggest if you want to get the most out of life and learn the most lessons is to capture the lessons that resonate with you. Now, what does that mean that resonates with you? That you strongly feel something when you hear a lesson and a story tied to that lesson. In my opinion, that's what intuition is. It's God telling you, hey, bozo, pay attention to this. That's why I'm making you feel strongly about this, strongly agree with what I have to say, or strongly disagree. And I learn more from what bugs the shit out of me to find out why. And so I spend the majority of my time learning lessons about the things that I feel strongly against to figure that out. And so understanding intuition and capturing that which you feel strongly about is really important in this idea of progress, in the idea of pursuing your potential, not what other people think, not what other people want for you, not what's missing, not what you don't have, especially not what social media says you should have, but what you want in the pursuit of yourself, your potential, your truth, your God. And so today, I'm going to share some stories and some lessons, and I hope you capture the ones that resonate with you. Remember, intuition, by the way, doesn't know time. One of the biggest mistakes that people use about, especially in entrepreneurship, gut feelings, it's the same mistake people have at the craps table. Anybody here play craps? All right, right on. So anyone know the game of craps? The dice? Okay, good. Everybody? So I used to play craps in what my wife calls Dirty Dave days. My oldest daughter works for me, so I don't go any farther. But while I was playing craps, God would talk to me. And invariably, he would say, hard eight. Right? God would, clear as day, I swear. So I'd take $1,000, I'd put it on the hard eight, I'd roll or the other person would roll and boom, no hard eight. So I put another $1,000 on, no hard eight. Three or four times later, no hard eight. Three or four more roll later after I stop putting $1,000 down, what hits? Hard eight. This is what happens in life. See, God or your source, your God, doesn't know man-made constructive time. So when you have an intuitive thought, when you feel strongly about something, when you hear your calling, don't think it's an immediate calling. He doesn't understand a minute, an hour, a day, a week, a month, or a year. It's just telling you to elevate your awareness that this is something, a lesson for you to learn, something that's going to be important to you in your journey. And that's why you should capture these. So I was born in Akron, Ohio. In fact, yesterday was the heavenly birthday of my mom. I'm a 58-year-old mama's boy, and I was blessed to have the greatest mom you could have. She raised six kids on her own. She worked two jobs, second grade teacher, packed our dinner in a paper bag. We drove around Akron, Ohio in a station wagon, a Country Squire station wagon. If you know what that is, I know how old you are. And filled up turnstiles with greeting cards just so we could eat. My siblings are what I like to call parents' wet dreams. they were perfect kids, went to Harvard, Penn, Columbia, graduated summa cum laude, never caused any problems. They listened to my mom. She had some great sayings like the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. I heard that one. Doctor, lawyer, or failure. I definitely heard that one. In fact, one of the greatest moments of my life was the last day I got to talk to my mom. I've been honored with an honorary doctorate, and I went to go see my mom to say goodbye. It was very close to the end. My wife, who lost her mom at 25, told me this probably is the last time you're going to talk to her. And so I went up to my mom and I said, "Mom, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, and I'm a failure." And she smiled at me and she said, "I know, I'm so proud of you, especially because you're such a good failure." And she laughed and told me she loved me, and I said goodbye. And later that day, she passed away, which reminded me of her favorite quote, my favorite lesson, which I've lived with my whole life. "You're either humble or you're about to be." And I remember telling my wife when I left, saying goodbye to my mom, she's like, "You're going to be okay." I'm like, "Oh yeah, it could be fine. I got to say goodbye. This is not a surprise. It's a long time coming. You better place," all those things. And the minute I found out, my heart was broken and I dropped to my knees, reminded, "You're either humble or you're about to be." So my mom lived in humility, and I didn't really subscribe to the same philosophy as my mom. I always say, I don't think I ever really listened to my mom. People, you know, I watched her. That's pretty much what I did. I watched her till the day she died. And I learned so many great lessons, but never really took her advice, including going to the Ivy Leagues. I wanted to be rich. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be rich to buy my mom a house. I wanted to create financial security for my mom and my siblings. And all I cared about was money for the sake of buying my mom a house. And I decided as a wise teenager that the way I would be rich was to be a professional football player. I love that people laugh at that. Thank you. If I told you I was going to be an oil and gas litigator, do you think anybody would laugh? No, they're like, "Of course you are. Look at you." So I subscribed to what I talked about in there, enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. I carried a football ball everywhere I went. And remarkably enough, I got a scholarship to college to play football. And to this day, people ask me, "Mr. Melcher, what's the closest you've come to your potential?" And I always say, I was a below average college football player. That was the closest I've ever come to my potential, right? Our skills and our knowledge are a basement. The delta is created by desire, and our potential lies out here far beyond our desire. And so it was funny because I would go to college and I was the fastest one on my college football team. I was the fastest one on almost every team because I had a big mouth and four brothers. So I learned to run scared faster than anybody could angry, which made me a great punt returner, kick returner, man-to-man coverage guy. But I remember the first day playing college football, my first game, I'm the bullet. And by the way, I weighed about 147 pounds, you can imagine, but very fast. So I'm the bullet on the kickoff team. And I remember saying in my head, "Okay, this is it. I'm going to show everybody in the world my NFL career starts here." And I fly down the field, first one to the ball carrier, and I smash with everything I had into it. And the next thing I knew, I'm flying backwards, literally like a flea. And he just flipped me off of his leg. And then to make matters worse, steps right on my chest and keeps on running. I laid on the ground as a freshman in college, 147 pounds, and all I could think about was a lesson my mom taught me: doctor, lawyer, or failure. My NFL aspirations died. I decided to be a doctor. I was pre-med in college. I went to go visit my oldest brother, who was doing his residency in Mount Sinai. Walked into the hospital. My brother said, "What's the matter?" I said, "I hate hospitals." He said, "What?" I go, "I hate hospitals." He goes, "Dave, you're pre-med and you hate hospitals?" I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm not going to be a hospital doctor." right? I'm 18. It's like all these 18-year-olds, I want to be a sports agent. Really, what is that like? And then they find out what it's really like, not really what they thought it was. Like Google watched the movie Jerry Maguire again and realize that's a love story. It's not a sports film. That's why it's so popular. Anyway, my brother gave me the best piece of advice that day that I repeat almost after every one of the thousands of shows that I do, which is he looked at me and he said, David, you need to be more interested than interesting. Be more interested than interesting. And my whole life has been guided from that point to be more interested. I want to find out what you know about subjects, topics, and expertise that I'm interested in. I want to know what you like, what you don't like, what's working, what's not working, what you know and what you don't know. Because if I can find all that out through being more interested, I can add value. My two favorite questions in the world is, would it help you if? And do you know anyone that can help me? My two favorite questions in the world are, would it help you if? And do you know anyone that could help me? And you can't find that out unless you're more interested than interesting. And so I went on this quest to figure out how I can make a lot of money and align with my timing and risk tolerance, my interests. And so I did my research and found out that oil and gas litigators made the most money out of law school, and Tulane University was the leading maritime law school in the entire world. So I went to Tulane Law School to be a maritime lawyer, oil and gas. And by the time I was graduating, I got two job offers. In 1992, I had a $150,000 a year plus bonus job offer from one of the biggest oil companies in the world to be an oil and gas litigator right out of Tulane. I also got a job offer for $250,000 in 1992 to sell legal research online. That's sounds interesting, but in 1992, let's just put it this way. When I presented Westlaw, to Justice Scalia, his response was, nobody will ever do research on a computer. You need books. My mom's advice, the internet's a fad. You're an idiot if you take this job. Nobody will ever use the internet. It's not going to last. Learning what? Just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. And I want to tell you, parents out there, there's two types of people. There's ignorant people that don't know what they don't know, and there's ignorant people that don't know what they don't know. The difference between these two ignorant people is we see them on social media, at least I do, what I call ignorant, arrogant people. Right? They hate you for no reason. Somebody actually told me one time, you stole gratitude from Gary Vee. I'm fucking older than Gary Vee, let's be honest. And my grandma taught me gratitude well before I met Gary Vee. So it's hard to steal something you already had. But this is the kind of stupid shit that ignorant, arrogant people. And then, of course, there's the ignorant, humble people that admit they don't know what they don't know. They know you're either humble or you're about to be. Now, there's one caveat of ignorant, arrogant people, and it's mostly parents. Parents are the most ignorant, arrogant people out there. They don't know what they don't know, but they constantly pretend like they do because they're more afraid for their children than they are for anything else. So they're constantly giving advice about shit that they don't know out of fear, which is, by the way, kind of the worst way to give advice and the worst reason to give advice and the worst basis to give advice out of fear. But I'm raising my hand. I know this, and I still give ignorant, arrogant advice sometimes. And I did it recently. My daughter bought her first house in Chicago, and dummy over here, oh, yeah, you don't need to lock in. Interest rates are going down. Fuck, what the hell? No, right? Went up a point after I said that. And so we have to know as people the difference between ignorant arrogance and ignorant humility and surround ourselves with humility the best that we can. So I took this job in 9 months out of law school in 1992. I made my first $1 million. I bought a house and a car for my mom, reinforcing my belief that money would buy me happiness and love. In my mind, I was the favorite of six children. It was the way I distinguished myself. It was truly my own identity. And this idea of identity will go a long way because it deals with the ego, which I'll talk about with these five daily practices. But originally the ego, this identity was for your body, right? Saber-toothed tiger would go across your cave and your ego would say, shit, I better run. I better save myself. And then it moved to thought as we evolved as human beings. So now we're dealing with protecting our thoughts. Here are my feelings. And then your ego would come out with the need to be right, a need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, and resentful, interfering with this infinite, abundant, unified system of thought. Interfering with it to protect us from what we think we think. It's even worse today, though, because now the ego goes beyond the body, beyond the mind, and it goes onto its perceived identity, which is amplified by social media. So now we're protecting something that's completely illusionary, a perceived identity, body, mind, into a perceived identity. And this idea of identity will be so important to your success of what do you think? What do you feel, believe, know, and do? I'm the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. He was the seminal thought leader about what we can conceive, we can achieve. It goes far beyond that. It's what you pay attention to, what you give intention to by what you're doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing equals the coincidences in your life. The coinciding of the universe with what you think, say, do, feel, and believe. And so utilizing subconsciously and unconsciously this philosophy, I make my first $1 million in 3 years out of law school. We sell for $3.4 billion. And I'm 27 years old. $3.4 billion in 1995. That was a lot of money back then, $3.4 billion. And it reinforced my identity as I went up to the Silicon Valley and learned how to raise money and learned about technology. I worked in middleware, raised hundreds of millions of dollars until in 1999, when I was 31, I ran Samsung's data phone division. Before they had what was called smartphones, I ran Samsung's, it was a Windows CE device, and it was called a convergence device, converging a PC and a phone. So we cleverly named that phone, which you've never seen before, but it was called the PC-E phone. Brilliant. Probably as brilliant as the iPhone, it was just early. It would have been the e-phone. More importantly, I lived a perfect life. I married my dream girl that I met in the fourth grade. We have three children at that time as we move forward. And right about that time, I got my first warning. Today is actually my dad's heavenly birthday, which is different than the way I feel about my mom. It's also Hitler's birthday, by the way. But I've gone through therapy and 30 years of forgiveness, and I love my father, and it's actually harder on me because of that relationship. But my dad, he was an amazing guy. When I was 30 years old, he gave me a jacket for my birthday. He hadn't given me a birthday present for 20 years, and he gave me this jacket. I remember getting the box. My wife was so excited. My dad actually gave me a birthday present, and I take it off, and it fits perfectly. And I look in to see if it says, you know, Armani or my son's birthday or something. And he had torn all the pockets out of the jacket. So I went from complete joy, thinking my father and I were going to be reunited in this extraordinary relationship. Here I was, top of the world. Now I went immediately to ego, called my dad. Dad, I got my birthday present. Oh, good. What'd you think? What do I think? Why would you give me a jacket with no pockets? Oh, well, it's not for wearing. I want you to hang it in the closet to remind you that you're just like me. I lost my lid. I'm like, just like you, you're a liar, a cheater, manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. I'm nothing like you. My dad had cheated on my mom, left when I was five, left six children to my single mom, never gave child support. I'm nothing like you. He said, son, money does not buy you everything. I don't want you to make the same mistakes as me. Hang that closet and remind yourself you can't take anything with you when you're gone. F you. I went on this journey making more money, helping people, having fun, but slowly but surely, all of the behaviors that got me to where I was so quickly started to dissipate and dissolve, and I surrounded myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas. My latest book is about this. It's called Don't Do Business with Dicks. After 8 books, Connected to Goodness, Compassionate Capitalism, Unstoppable, Creating the Life You Love, Game Time, those do not sell at the airport, but trust me, Don't Do Business with Dicks sells off the shelves. 6 years later, I'm running Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the most notable sports agency in the whole world. So not only was I worth over $100 million at the time, but I had access to what billionaires couldn't afford to do. I represented everyone: Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, Steve Young, Sabathia Ramirez, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis, you name it. We had some sort of business going on, and I was at the top of the world and never so empty in my life. I kept trying to fill this God-sized hole with everything but God. And my best friend, I invited him to go to the Masters, which I've gone for the last 30 years. My best friend, who actually had been my friend since the fourth grade, he's actually the guy at sixth grade camp who, because I was too afraid to ask my wife to go steady, asked her to go steady for me, and she said no. He embarrassed me, so of course I threw an egg at her, hit her on the back of the head. She had Rosanna Dana Dana hair. Didn't go over well, so it took me many, many years before she would date me, far after law school. But Rob was my best friend, and I asked Rob to go to the Masters with me. It was a net jet deal. It was me, Warren, Wayne Gretzky, Joe Montana, and I thought, wow, finally I get to give Rob something that he really loves, and I'm like super excited. Rob, we're going to the Masters. Oh, we're going with so-and-so and so-and-so. He's like, oh, I'm not going. Like, what do you mean you're not going? He's all, Dave, he goes, I don't like who you hang out with and what you're doing. I said, Rob, I'm not doing what those guys are doing. And he said to me, Dave, you can lie to me all you want, but you better stop lying to yourself because you're going to end up dead. My response was the same as it was to my dad. It was, F you, Rob. How dare you talk to me this way? You're supposed to be my best friend. And then 2 weeks later, my life would change forever. I represented and marketed a guy called Little John. He's a rapper. And some of you may know who he is. He's on the Pepsi commercial. Has a, yeah. So John wanted me to go to the Grammy Awards with him. I asked my wife if I could go. She told me, really, I shouldn't go, not paying attention to work, not paying attention to my family, and I was partying way too much. And she asked me to stay home. So I lied to her, told her I had a business meeting, changed my clothes in the car, went up to Beverly Hills to the Grammy Awards, ended up coming home 5:30 in the morning, completely wasted. As I was walking up to the door, I could see her silhouette waiting for me. Wasn't thinking too much of it until I opened the door, and as she was crying, told me she wasn't happy and she was leaving. She told me I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, or else I'd end up dying. And she wasn't going to. At the time, my daughters were under 10, wasn't going to be around for my daughters to see that, and she was leaving. My response was the same as when my mom told me I was lost, my dad told me I was lost, Rob told me I was lost. It was to tell her, F you. Except for I added this one. I said, look around you. Who do you think did all of this? How dare you talk to me? And I went to bed, woke up in the morning more full of hate. I hated my mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. That doesn't tell you something. And I sat there on the bed and I looked over, and there was this jacket hanging in the closet. I hadn't seen that jacket in years. And it hit me, the first calling I ever had from God, that I didn't hate my mom, my dad, my best friend, or my wife, that I hated myself. I was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, overseller, and back-end seller, just like my dad. So fortunately, I took stock in who I was and wanted to become, and I asked my wife to give me a chance. Now, she's so wise. She didn't say, Dave, if I see you doing any drugs or alcohol, I'm going to leave you. If I see you at a strip club or doing anything you shouldn't do, I'm going to leave you. She said, David, as long as I see you trying, I'll stay with you. If I see you working at this every day, because I know there, I've seen it since I've been little, you can put your mind to it. You'll do it. I'll stick with you. So I came up with these 5 daily practices so I could stick to the behaviors that my wife expected me to have. And these 5 daily practices have changed millions of people's lives. They're simple, but the first lesson about simplicity is the simple thing to do are simple not to do. If you don't believe me, think about gratitude. I promise you, if you say thank you before you go to bed and thank you when you wake up, and you can do that for 30 straight days, you can practice that, just that, your life will change dramatically for the better. But here's the sad thing. By tonight, although half of you are already shaking your head, yes, you agree with me. So does, by the way, almost every human being alive. The power of gratitude is well known and documented and agreed upon. By tonight, half of you won't say thank you. By tomorrow morning, another half of us won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us won't be saying thank you before they go to bed and when they wake up. Even though every human being, every great thought leader has written books, indicated, preach, teach, mentored gratitude, and yet that's how much we're in our own way. That's how simple it is to do, but the simple things to do are simple not to do. So I came up with these 5 daily practices. The first one is knowing my what. What? Knowing my W-H-A-T. What do I want today in alignment with where I think I want to be in the future? What is it I want today personally, professionally, giving-wise, receiving-wise, experientially? What is it I want today in alignment with where I want to be better, but also aligning the meaning of the past with that as well? You see, most people, they limit their self-image because they give the wrong meaning to the failures, the setbacks, the mistakes, the defining moments, the historical relevances of their life, even the successes. 2 years after I created the daily practices, I lost everything, over $100 million. Imagine this, losing $100 million, going bankrupt, walking over to your mom's house when the only reason you wanted to be rich in the first place was to buy her that house. And so I walked up to the door, knocked on it. The minute she came to the door, I started to cry. I could barely talk. I was like that 4-year-old. She's like, Dave, what's the matter? Is Julie okay? Are the kids okay? Are you okay? Yeah, mom, I lost everything, but I didn't take my name off the title. I lost your house. You need to move. Oh, do you need some money? Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost your home. You need to move. Oh, no, I heard you. Are you okay? Then I started crying even harder. She's like, what's the matter? I'm like, Mom, I fucking lost everything. Why would God punish me? And my mom smirked at me. I'll never forget. Punish you? Yeah, why is he punishing me? God doesn't punish you. He's protecting you, promoting you, loving you, perfecting you. You got to figure out how. Well, Mom, I don't believe in God. My mom's very religious. She smirked at me again. She goes, oh, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God. I needed to know what I wanted, not only in alignment with where I wanted to be or better, but I had to align the meaning of the past. Because it's the meaning that you give, and you have the power to give meaning to everything you see. It's the meaning you give, the relativity of what you give in alignment with where you want to be that decides your self-image, and you will never, never overachieve your own self-image, and neither will your children. So if you're not doing everything to increase your children's self-image and give the meaning to the mistakes, I built a brand called Made From Mistakes. It's my partner over there, Drew, to give meaning to those mistakes. Because if somebody would have told me when I lost everything, including my mom's house, that somehow I'd be standing here today doing the things that I do, making more money than I've ever had to help more people than I ever could imagine and having more fun than I even could imagine, I'd have told you to fuck off. Probably would have kicked you or hit you. But I changed the meaning of that bankruptcy. I changed the meaning of my past to align with my divine direction. I decided to know what I wanted each and every day. The second lesson is know your who. Knowing your who is so important. Knowing who you can help and who can help you is essential in the acceleration of your divine direction. The fastest way to get to where you want to be, why you belong to EO, YPO, or other organizations, is because you know the fastest way to get to where you want to be is to find someone that's already there and ask them for directions. Or help someone get where they want to be. Everybody's heard from Covey, you know, you're the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. Bullshit. Or else moms of five kids. That's just not how it works. What you're really doing is you should be very intentional of who you surround yourself with. By subject matter, topic, and expertise, by the way. You're playing on teams all the time, and if you're very intentional about who you surround yourself with, people that can give you directions of where they are and helping other people get to where they are, you will get to where you want to be faster. It'll be accelerated because it's mentorship, coaching, and teaching that gets you to where you want to be on both sides of it. Remember, a mentor is what? Someone who sits in a situation that you want to be in and can give you direction. A teacher is what? Someone that can teach you how to take the steps to get from A to B. A coach is what? Someone that's going to bring the best out of you so you can accelerate getting from A to B. But here's the thing about getting from A to B. Regardless of having the greatest mentors, teachers, and coaches, getting from A to B is a private lesson between you and your God. That's probably the most frustrating thing about being a mentor, coach, and a teacher is getting from A to B, regardless of how you can help accelerate that process, is still a private lesson. And I see a lot of my coaching clients out there shaking their head going, shit, I know. If Dave tells me one more time the same fucking thing, got to be annoying to be a great teacher, coach, and mentor. You got to be truthful and repetitive. Human beings hate the truth and they hate repetition, but you have to do it to be a mentor, coach, or a teacher. You got to know your who. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Figure out what team you want to play for by subject matter, topic, and expertise. Are you the owner? Are you the coach? Are you the guard? Are you the center? Are you the ball boy, the water boy? Where on that team are you playing and who are you playing with in order to get to where you want to be or better? It's that simple. If you know your what, the nothingness that most people live in, that nothingness, the myth of Sisyphus that Camus wrote about in The Strangers, that feeling of pushing a boulder to the top of the hill just to have it roll back down every day to the bottom of the hill. Most people, Napoleon Hill states 98% of the people are drifters. They live in nothingness. Basically, what he's saying is most people are tubes. Food in, food out. That's their whole life. But the minute you know what you want in your divine direction, that nothingness becomes a possibility. The minute you know your who, it becomes a probability. These are actually mathematical, quantitative, literal advancements. There's a difference between nothing possible and probable. And these are the steps to make your nothingness possible and probable, to fill the God-sized hole with something of God. The third daily practice is know your how. Now, this is where time comes in. I'm a time freak. I love time. And I have a few great pieces of advice of knowing how, which will give you that great ability to get things done. See, life is pretty interesting. Human experience is here for lessons. Lessons keep on coming until you learn them. You'll forget every lesson that's ever learned, but you have the power. What we're learning now with AI and technology, you have the power to access every lesson that ever was. I'm going to repeat that. Life is about lessons. The lessons keep on coming until you learn them. You will forget every lesson you've ever learned, but you have the power to access every lesson there ever was. That's powerful. So God gives you this human experience to learn lessons, and it starts when your heart starts. It stops when your heart stops. Your hair can fall out. Your eyes can stop working. Other things can stop working, as I'm learning. Asking for a friend. But it's the heart. You know, there's billions of dollars in health right now and wellness. And the advice I give to people is listen to God, what he tells you about the human experience. He says, you're going to be here from the time the heart starts till it stops. I'm going to divide it by 24 hours of man-made constructive time. Use it to be productive, accessible, and gracious in your divine direction. So if our lives are determined by the lessons, but it's dictated by bookends of the heart starting and stopping, you might think about what God says about the heart working. He says, number one, if you don't breathe, your heart will stop. How many of you have a breathing coach? Breathing exercises, practice breathing. Of course you do. I would have picked you out of the crowd. Of course you do. Because you know what life's about. What does God say next? If you don't drink, your heart will stop. Who has a drinking coach? Not that kind of drinking coach, the one that's actually health. Eat. You don't eat, you die. Anybody have private nutrition, optimal health? More people today do. He also says, if you don't move, you will die. We have movement coaches for that reason. And then finally, the majority of your life, the biggest habit that we have, if you don't sleep, you will die. Your heart will stop. I've had a sleep coach for 18 years. It's my new goal of being in the Hall of Fame of sleep. Sleep's for recovery and access of information. Those people that recover better perform better. That's proven. Those people that have a higher level of awareness, access information, life is easier, not dis-easier. And so thinking about how am I going to do this? How am I going to pursue my potential in my divine direction, aligning the meaning of the past, finding the right people to surround myself with? How am I going to do it? Well, we have 24 hours a day to figure it out because the only certainty we have is 24 hours a day. And we know that there's no certainty other than the 24 hours. What happens in that 24 hours is always circumstantial. So how do we get the most out of our 24 hours? Have non-negotiable behaviors for half the day. So for me, 12 hours of every day of my life is non-negotiable. No matter what the circumstances of the day, no matter what happens, interest rates, weather, delays, arguments, whatever it is, 12 of those hours are taken care of with sleep, health, family, finance, faith, the study of time, so I utilize it effectively, and the study of relativity to that time. No matter what happens. So now I'm hedging certainty against the uncertainty that exists in every day, the circumstances that exist every day. And if I should miss because I needed to make an exception, I double down, super prioritize the non-negotiable that I missed the day before so I never have two losses in a row. I never start stacking losses in my life. The cool thing is 90% of your success will come from those non-negotiable behaviors. The other 12 hours of awake time, the majority of your awake time, really doesn't mean shit because you don't know what you don't know. And so all you're going to do is try to prioritize according to the circumstances of the day in alignment with where you want to be, surrounding yourself with the right people and the right ideas to get to where you want to be or better. Life becomes easy when you start identifying the dis-easy. When there's certainty in your life, knowing that I spend a minimum amount of time sleeping, health, family, finance, faith, the study of time, and the study of relativity. Know your what, it's a possibility. Know your who, it's a probability. Know your how, it now becomes your perspective. It becomes your perspective, and your perspective is the meaning of your day divided by non-negotiable and negotiable behaviors. The fourth daily practice. Know your now. Did you know 100% of the things you do now get done? 100% of the things you do next get done as well. I used to hate statistics. You know, my favorite statistics before I found out 100% of the things you do now get done was 99% of all statistics are made up. Just seeing if you're listening. Do it now. Do it next. See, prioritization according to the circumstances of the day, prioritization, pre-prioritization, post-prioritization, prioritization is the antidote to every entrepreneur's problem. You realize it is impossible to feel overwhelmed if you prioritize. If you know what to do now and know what to do next, you won't feel overwhelmed because you're doing things all day long in an efficient, effective, and statistically successful way. It also is the antidote to procrastination. Like I said, the two biggest problems with entrepreneurs, they feel overwhelmed or they procrastinate. Why? Because they don't know how to prioritize, because they don't know what's important to them, because they haven't taken the time to know what they want, who they can help, who can help them, and how to get it done with non-negotiable, negotiable behaviors. Activities that they get paid for, don't get paid for, sleep, unplanned, planned time. All of these things are prioritized according to the circumstances of the day. Because we really don't give a shit, because 90% of the outcomes in our lives are created by the consistent, persistent behaviors of the non-negotiable behavior: sleep, health, family, finance, faith, the study of time, and the study of relativity. In that prioritization, can you give more time to sleep? Absolutely. Can you give more time to your family? Absolutely. Can you give more time to faith? Absolutely. It's your choice, according to the circumstances of the day, by what's important to you, not what's important to other people, what's missing, what you don't have, or what social media says is important. What you feel, think, say, do, and believe aligned in your divine direction and the meaning aligned with it as well is important to you. So if you know your what, your who, your how, and now, your now is your reality. So we've taken you with four of the daily practices from nothingness right to a reality that you manifested by paying attention to what you want, who can help you, how to get it done, and prioritizing and giving it intention. Doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing aligned with where you want to be or better. And that equals the coincidences in your life, the coinciding. Other people may call it manifestation, materialization, or monetization. This shit works. It's science. What you pay attention to and what you give intention to equals the coincidences in your life. Guaranteed. So many thought leaders have written about this, seminal development people from Napoleon Hill all the way to Tony Robbins. They're all saying the same shit in a different way. What you pay attention to and what you give intention to equals the coincidences in your life. So the fifth and final daily practice, apply your why. See, so many people ask me, I'm trying to find my why, my purpose. First of all, the thoughts about your purpose are your purpose. Aren't you listening? I repeat that. The thoughts about your purpose are your purpose. See, when we apply our why, we're utilizing an infinite, abundant, unified system of everything for everyone. Of course you're applying your why. You're part of the why. You're not in search of it. So under the context is a universe that's abundant, infinite, unified, intuition, infinite, intelligence, infinite, inspiration, infinite, energy, infinite. We need to figure out what we're doing to interfere with it. I was talking about earlier, I work as an advisor to the professional athletes community. It's a YPO for pro athletes. And a lot of them will come shadow me. So they meet me at 4 a.m. when I wake up till 5 p.m. when I spend family time after 5 p.m. By 3 o'clock or so, they're all exhausted. I remember Dwayne Wade was with me traveling. Obviously, Dwayne's probably better shape than I am, taller, stronger, faster, at least, probably cardiovascularly 10 times as fit as I am, literally napping in the back seat. And he wakes up. He's like, dude, how do you have so much energy? You're 58 years old and you're definitely not stronger, faster than me, cardiovascularly more fit. I'm like, yeah, but all of that only determines how much energy you can utilize and how you can utilize. That's why you can run faster, jump higher for a short amount of time. But you see, the difference between me and you is I spent all day at ease. When I talked to my wife and she put me at dis-ease, as sometimes your spouse will, I spent minutes and moments with a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, or resentful. Feelings that we get sometimes with the people that have installed our triggers. You, when you talk to your wife, you spend about 3 hours burned out. So even with that terrific body you have, you couldn't handle the amount of energy you weren't getting. What are you doing to interfere with your health, your wealth, your worthiness? What are you doing to interfere with it? And so in order to apply our why, I want you to shift your paradigm. Instead of saying, I'll be happy when, I'm going to get this. It's simply, what am I doing to interfere with what already exists? And how do we do that? Number one, we have to understand the ego. It goes from body to mind to perception. Practice applying your why by recognizing the clues and the patterns of how you respond to the reaction to fear. With what? A need to be right, a need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, worried, All of these different things are going to do nothing but interfere with your potential, whatever that may be. So how do we do it? Do you go over and under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, or deny it? Remember, logic can't what? Can't overcome emotion, right? Anybody who's been in school and you go to bed and logic tells you, let it go, let it go. Anyone ever tell themselves, let it go? Yeah, and what do you wake up saying? Let it go, just twice as impactful. Because logic does not overcome emotion. So when your mind, body, and soul are on fire, the first thing I want you to do is to stop. Now, that sounds easy, but just like saying thank you, the simple things to do are simple not to do. Stopping is not easy. I'll get in an argument with my wife and literally be having a conversation in my own head saying, shut up, oh, don't, and I'd say something and then it gets worse. And I'm like, oh, you didn't just say that, did you? Stop, stop. And then I'll try to run away. Don't run away from me. Stopping is not easy when your emotions are there. But I want you to stop and breathe through your nose, out through your mouth, drop down. I want you to remind yourself, remember yourself, recollect yourself with your God, your higher self. Remind, remember, and recollect. And then roll back into the divine direction of what you want, who you can help, who can help you, how to get that done. Reprioritize by what's important according to this circumstance. Now you're applying your why. You're utilizing the infinite amount of intelligence, inspiration, energy that exists, your intuition that exists. It's quite simple. Another lesson my mom taught me is if you ever catch on fire, your mind, your body, your soul, you catch on fire, what do? Stop. Drop and roll. Roll back into what you want, who you can help, who can help you, how to get it done. Pre-prioritize, prioritize, reprioritize. Keep on applying your why. And I promise you, you will make a lot of money. You will help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. And if you do that, I know one thing. I've never met anyone who makes a lot of money for the sake of helping others and has fun with it that isn't happy. And if you're happy, that'll make me happy. God bless you all. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.